Okay, so welcome everyone and happy to see everyone. Glad that you're back. Okay, so we're going to continue our study of the prayers. We've looked a bit at the concept behind it, the tools that prayer can be. We've looked at a number of the key concepts, even key words. Last week we spoke a little bit about what we do and the bowing and the meaning for that. So I want to look for the next few minutes that we have together. I'd like to spend some time exploring some of the actual prayers themselves, going through the actual prayers, and hopefully it can be helpful in our personal life, in our personal prayers, if we go through it and study it and see what is it that we're saying. As we've discussed in the past, there's informal prayer, which is not only good, it's compelling. We need to be doing that, but there's also formal prayer that was written for us, where our job is to try to connect to it, try to make that an expression of ourselves. We add to it, but the words themselves that were written for us were written by individuals extremely steeped in the knowledge of Torah and the spiritual knowledge of, so to speak, how to approach God and what to ask for and how to ask for it. And so it really behooves us to understand what it is they're talking about and see how it can relate to us and what meaning it has. So I would like to do is look at the request part. If you remember, I'm sure you do, we've spoken extensively about the three parts that are definitional of Jewish prayer. In other words, even before the actual text was written, you see, in Jewish tradition, the way it goes is that the Torah itself has certain obligations, and oftentimes those, especially the prayers that we say, were subsequently the actual formal prayer that we have, the Amidah or the grace after the meals. The words of those were written by the great rabbis long, long time ago, but the text itself doesn't come from the Torah. Certain texts come from the Torah itself, like the Shema, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That is word for word taken from the Torah. That is a Torah text. The words of the grace after the meals are not in the Torah text itself. The Torah says, you shall eat, you will be satisfied, and you shall acknowledge God. You shall say your blessing, bless God. And until the rabbis of the men of the Great Assembly, 2,500 years ago, came along, there was 1,000 years or more that Jews were saying grace after the meals, perhaps including fundamental concepts, but the words were their own. Eventually, the rabbis, for practical reasons and for spiritual reasons, sat down and wrote the text for us. So that's what we have, is not 3,300 years old. The obligation is 3,300 years old from the Torah. The actual verbiage that we use is 2,500 years old. Same thing with prayer. The idea of praying every day is a Torah obligation. Jews always did that. They did it in their own words. And at a certain point, these great Torah scholars and prophets sat down and wrote a text for us to use as our foundation, to use as our structured prayer. Encouraged us to continue with informal prayer as well, but that was the structure of prayer. So, what is the, before they wrote that, what was the fundamental definition of prayer? It was praise, requests, and thanks. That is by definitional, Maimonides, Rambam says, that is by definition what prayer is. So, that's always been a part of prayer. And I want to look tonight, anyway, at the requests. Requests are pretty much the middle section of the Amidah. There's three sections of praise up front, and then there's the big modim, thank you, at the end. The middle is basically requests. That's what the middle is. And I want to go through some of them, explore what they are, and look at the words. Okay? So this is, I'll get my screen up here. Okay, so the structure, oh, so first of all, I will go through the requests in a minute, but I want to point out that the very first words in Amidah, before the praises, so there's three sections. There's praise, three paragraphs of praise, 13 paragraphs of requests, and then the modim and three paragraphs at the end, the central part of which is the thank you of the modim. Those are the three parts of the Amidah. Right? The first part, pure praise, no request, nothing, just praising God. Like we said, it's important for us. God doesn't need a pat on the back. We need to know and to internalize to whom it is we are speaking when we go and ask for it, with whom I'm trying to have this relationship when I go and ask for my needs to be met. So we do praises first. However, there is a one-liner before the praises. There's one line that was added as an introduction almost to the Amidah. And I want to look at that. The one line is a verse taken from Psalms, which is, O Lord, open my lips and my mouth will declare your praise. Adonai sfasai tiftach, open my lips, and or so that my mouth will declare your praise. It's a request. Open my lips. What is the meaning of that request? The idea behind it is that we should be, in theory, we should be so awestruck by this opportunity to not just speak about God, not to speak to God, but to be what we called in the last couple of classes, Omeid Lefdei HaMelech, standing before the king. This one-on-one opportunity that the Amidah presents should be so awe-inspiring, in theory, if we truly internalize what was going on, that me, mortal human individual me, one of billions, standing before the Almighty Creator of heaven and earth, that opportunity should be so overwhelming and awe-inspiring that I'm not even able to open my lips. I'm tongue-tied out of fear, out of awe, out of respect. I wouldn't even be able to say, God, you are mighty and you are strong and you are, I can't even find the words to say it. The idea is that the theory behind that first line. It's like, as God, let me help me get through this. Help me be able to do this. Now, the truth is, how many of us truly feel that way, that we're tongue-tied and we need God's help to be able to request the things that we need? I don't feel that way. I'm not going to speak for anybody else here, but I can't say honestly that I'm tongue-tied before I believe in the idea that I'm standing before the king. But there's a big difference in Jewish tradition. There's a lot of emphasis put on the gap between what we know and what we feel. We can know something intellectually. The big job in life is internalizing it so that we feel it, and it defines our actions. You know, it's easy to kind of know something, you know. So we say it as if we actually feel it. And this is a principle by a lot of rituals in Judaism. If we feel it, excellent, that's why it's there. If we don't feel it, we say it so that we realize what we should be feeling. And that itself is a learning experience. So when we say that, it's worth stopping and thinking, wow, I should be tongue-tied right now and not even be able to open my mouth because I'm standing before the king. I don't really feel that way yet. I want to feel that way. You know, I know I should be feeling that way. I don't feel yet, so I'm doing the ritual almost as a reminder of what I should be feeling as opposed to as an expression of what I'm actually feeling. And hopefully, over time, that shifts, that it's more internalized and we realize it more and feel it more. And I know people who do feel it much more than I do. Maybe these people feel it less. I don't know. But I know that is an important statement to make beforehand. Also part of internalizing what we're about to do. So we do that and we say the praises. Maybe next week, I'm going a little bit out of order. I'm doing the requests first, just because that really is almost the main part of the service. And I think that's what some people were interested in looking at. So I'm going to look at those right now. We saw in the past the structure. We'll look at it again. So these are the middle 13. Beforehand, you have the praise. And this is how, like I said, you might summarize the content of the Amidah. The requests, right, are, and I think I may have sent this out. If not, I'm happy to. But it's just a list. And here's what we ask for. I want to go through them quickly before we look at them. Then we'll look at each one or a few of them word by word. But the list basically is we ask for wisdom, intellectual enlightenment. We ask to be returned to a state of closeness with God. We ask to be forgiven for things we've done wrong. We ask to be redeemed from pain and strife, to be healed, and that to have make a living. Our produce should be good and plentiful, which means that we should be able to make a living and have the financial resources that we need. Okay, I'm pausing here because you'll notice these six are personal needs. We go on from that to six communal needs, which we certainly will not get to tonight, but look at them, which is Jews returning to the land of Israel, the ingathering of the exiles, Jewish judges returning to rule, our enemies being defeated, the pious should be rewarded, God's presence should return to Jerusalem, and the Mashiach should arrive. Those are the next six that we ask for that are more on a communal level for the Jewish people as opposed to on an individual level. I would point out, important, that even then the last one is that our prayers should be heard. So that's for like the catch-all. I mentioned that in the first week, I think, first or second week, that the 13th one in the middle is the prayer, that our prayers should be accepted. Okay, so that's a separate category unto itself. Maybe we'll get to that. But basically, you have six personal ones and six communal ones. The six personal ones, important to note, is that as you'll see when we look through them momentarily, they're all said in the plural. I don't remember if I made that point before or not, but they're all said in the plural, which is even though really approaching God is I have needs, God created me with needs, as we discussed, right? And so I am approaching him to help me, to ask for his help in satisfying those needs and providing those needs. But it's always important, the Talmud says, to include others in your prayers. And so when they wrote the prayers for us, they wrote them in the plural. Even if you're totally on your own, just praying for yourself, include the others. If you have family, wonderful. You're including the family, for sure. But when we say the plural, the we, help us, we'll see a lot of expressions of help us, provide us. So I think intuitively, instinctively, we think of perhaps family or friends that we have. The truth is we're talking about the whole Jewish community. We're approaching God on behalf of that, the extended family, if you will. And that's how we're approaching God, and we're asking for help with each one of the things. So let's take a look at a couple of them right now. So the interesting thing is the first one that for which we ask is, okay, here's the middle section. First one is knowledge, as it said on the list. Right? The words are, you graciously, and you'll notice that some of them, not all, but some of them in the requests reiterate praise, but specific praise related to the request. So we praised God extensively at the beginning, the three blessings at the beginning, that was extensive praise of God. Now we're about to ask for knowledge and understanding, insight, wisdom. We'll see about that in a moment. But first we give a praise that's related to that. So we start off, you graciously favor man with knowledge and teach mortals understanding. God, you are the source of wisdom. Favor us with knowledge, understanding, and prudence. Now, here's the thing. You know, they always say you can tell a lot about a culture by its language. You can tell what's going on. So, you know, I don't know. I've always heard it said. I don't know if it's true. You know, that Eskimos have a lot of different words for snow and ice and no words for surfing. Right? I mean, it doesn't exist in the culture. It's not there, so they're not doing it. There's no word for it. We have a lot of different words, nuanced differences about things like wisdom, things like commandments, you know, all these type of things. We have a lot of different words. And our tradition says that there's no synonyms. In the biblical Hebrew, God's language is a perfect language. So each one of the words picks up a nuance, a certain aspect of wisdom, of intellect, of knowledge. Right? So there's different words there. And it's hard to define exactly what they are, what each one is, but there is definitely requests for wisdom, insight, understanding right up front. That is number one. You might have thought health is first, or you might have thought sustenance is first, or whatever it is. Forgiveness, if you want to think spiritually. Right? By the way, those six that were individual, the first three were more spiritual. Wisdom, returning to God, and forgiveness. And the next three were saving from strife and health, and giving health, granting of health, and healing the sick, and providing sustenance. Three spiritual, three material, is how it was divided up. But the one that's right up front, the first one, is asking God for intellect, for wisdom, for understanding. Right? So I'd like to get some of your ideas, just for a couple of minutes, what might be included, practically speaking, when you say that tonight or tomorrow, when you say the Amidah, and you get up to that one and you want to ask God, you know, why is it so important that it's first? And what actually is it, practically speaking? What is it that we're asking for when we ask for that? Somebody unmute yourself, or I'll see if I can unmute everybody. No, I don't know. I can't for some reason, but please unmute yourself if you want to speak up. Give me an idea of what, why it's so important and what actually is it that, how does this apply in our everyday life, what we're asking for? I mean, if I'm not taking a big test tomorrow, if I'm taking a big test tomorrow, so I'm thinking about the answers to the test. Okay, God, help me ace that test. Fine. I'm not taking a big test tomorrow, so why am I asking for wisdom, intellect, knowledge, prudence? What's that about? Don't be shy. Someone's
here. I'll try.
Go ahead, Myra.
I just, could it be the knowledge that there is God? Isn't that a beginning that we have to acknowledge that God exists?
I think that's great. That is probably, as human beings, I think that is probably the most fundamental piece of knowledge that we need to have. That is probably true. And yeah, as it's to the degree that we don't have it fully yet. And again, we may have it here to some degree. That doesn't mean that it influenced me completely, and that's really governing my actions and my attitudes and my approach, my interactions with people and all that. So absolutely, I agree with that. Somebody else, what else is included in this? Yeah,
knowledge and learning about the Torah.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Learn not Torah knowledge itself, absolutely. Carol, go ahead.
Rabbi, what comes to my mind is that we ask for knowledge and understanding first, because if we don't have those, we may not be able to reap the benefits of the requests that are to follow.
Because why?
We won't know how to take the steps, or we won't recognize Hashem's hand or help when it presents itself.
Interesting. So I guess one thing that you might be referring to is the idea that, sure, we ask God for help, but we need to, like you said, put in our input. We need to recognize his hand, but it's there. And maybe we need the knowledge up front to be able to do all that. I think that's a great point. I think that's an excellent point. One more. Give me one more, somebody.
Make the right decisions in regard to our free will.
Beautiful. I think decisions... Somehow, I think decisions is very important, and I want to pick up on that in a moment. Dina, you're going to say something? Unmute yourself, Dina. You have to unmute yourself.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I was thinking that we're asking God to understand us and from where we're coming from, so that he could... point us in the direction that would get us to where we're going or where we want to go. Yeah, in other words, request understanding from Hashem as to where we're coming from.
That's a very interesting thought. It's a very interesting thought. I agree with you that we want God to do that. I would say it's automatic that he does. More than anybody, even more than we ourselves. I don't even know if we have to pray for that, really. That's almost by definition being God means that he created us and he's aware of, he made us who we are and gave us all our challenges and knows exactly what we are. So I agree with you, it's very important. I don't know if that's what we're asking for. I have to think more about that. That's a very interesting point. I think that, Molly, your point about decisions is extremely pervasive. And that is an important, I don't know, to me somehow that seems so important in the request for knowledge. You know, decisions in terms of what you said, free will, because we're going to be faced with challenges, moral, ethical challenges all the time, and being able to make the right decision is so fundamental to life. I think the very idea of prioritizing, you know, the priorities of, you know, how should I be using the resources that God gave me? Most first and foremost, the time that we have allotted to us here on earth. How do I use that? That decision is so significant. You know, there's a Talmud, totally unrelated to prayer. There's a legal discussion in the Talmud in terms of competency for someone to stand trial or competency to responsibility for their actions. Who's called what halachically would be called... sane or insane, or there's discussions about this in the Talmud. And one of the indications of knowledge or lack thereof is if you give them something precious and they throw it away, they squander it. They can't, they don't distinguish between, you know, if you give him somebody something precious and he holds on to it, and you give him junk and he throws it away, so then you know he has the requisite amount of understanding to be a functioning human being, something like that. Whereas if he squanders something of great value, just throws it away, can't appreciate what it is, it's not something I should be able to appreciate. There's such a discussion. It always makes me think of like that idea of, you know, we're on Earth for a limited amount of time, and what are our trade-offs that we do, you know, with the time that we have or the resources that God has given us? How do we spend it? How do we use it? Do we look for long-term gains? Do we look for short-term pleasure? That whole challenge, that whole discussion that we can have about that is a big decision-making thing, you know, and that is. Then on a practical level, I think there are difficult people in our lives and difficult situations that we're going to face, you know, and sometimes it's not so easy to know, how do I get out of this one? How do I deal with this? What do I, and that's a place for prayer. Stand before God and say, God, do you want me to handle this right? You know, and I know you're the one, you can put the idea, sometimes you get an idea in your head, you don't know where it came from. And you say, wow, this is a great idea, right? Well, that's what we're asking for. You're asking for God for guidance and being able to handle the challenging situations, the difficult people. There's just so much of that we deal with in life. And just understanding what's important and priorities, that right up front, the first thing we ask for is wisdom. Again, we ask for chachma. In English, there are different words for it. The translations are hard sometimes. But the point is, there's many different types of wisdom, all of which are the first thing that we ask for, because that's the hallmark of a human being. The hallmark of a mature, reasoning human being is his ability to think and to make decisions properly. And we need that to be able to function, everything else that we're going to do. So that's number one on the list. The first thing, you know, the last praise that we said in the praises is that about God's holiness, just the holiness, you know, that God embodies, that God is a holy being. And so that's the last thing we spoke about before this. And really the first thing we talk about wisdom is almost like, okay, how do I take some of that holiness and bring it into my regular, secular, mundane, everyday life? We need wisdom for that. And that's the first thing. It's kind of like the link to God's holiness, and God makes himself available to us. We can draw on that holiness. Okay, I need God's help to help figure out how to influence, how to bring that into life, to make my everyday physical, material life holy as well. I'm not going to be living a purely holy life. It's going to be a physical, material life, a this worldly life. How do I bring holiness into that? That's also an intellectual tool, an intellectual power that we need to have. And so we ask God right up front for the wisdom. Right? The second request, well, hopefully we'll get at least through two of them. The second request that we ask for is fascinating. Is, now they call it repentance. Return us, our Father, to your Torah. Draw us near, our King, to your service. Now pause right here. Hashivenu, return us. Father, King, two types of relationships that we have with God. Right? Love him as a parent or respect as a king. They're both true. And we ask God to bring us back. There's a fundamental problem with this request. You see, everything else we ask for wisdom, it's in God's hands. We ask for saving us, forgiveness, that's in God's hands, certainly. We ask for saving us from our afflictions and strife, God's hands, he controls that. You know, we have to go through the motions, we can't just rely on the miracle, but ultimately, as we discussed in the past, it's in God's hands. That's the whole idea of what the Talmud calls, everything is in the hands of heaven. It's all in the hands of God, except for healing, making a living. You could work hard. There's a lot of people who work hard and don't make a living. You could do a lot of exercise and eat well, and God forbid, get sick at a young age. It doesn't always work. It's in God's hands. So all these things are in God's hands. Right? He wants us not to rely on the miracle. He wants us to put in the input, but ultimately to know it's in God's hands. That is the magic sauce, the magic formula of faith in God that we need to have. The one that is out, that stands out, there's one exception to this rule of everything being in God's hands. And that is the moral and ethical decisions. Mali mentioned before the free will that we have. When it comes to getting close from God or distance from God, That's not God's job. That's our job. God asks us to do that. 2 weeks ago on the Torah, 3 weeks ago, it said, now Israel, what does God request of you? But to do his mitzvahs, to be a good person, to fear God, to walk the right, to live the right life and walk the right path. That's what God asks of us. That's the one thing God asks of us. Everything else he takes care of. I got this. He's got all the other stuff covered. You could pray for it. You could put in some efforts, but I got it covered. But this one, he asks us to do. So what are we doing when we ask God to return us to your Torah and draw us near to your service? It's a good question. Why are we praying to get close to God? I mean, if God would come and give me health, will I be healthy? Yeah. If he gives me a lot of money, will I be rich? Yeah. If he pulls me back to him, am I really closer to him? If I didn't make the free will choice to get closer to him? I mean, how does that work? That I'm asking God to return us, to draw us near our King to your service. Anybody have a thought about that? You hear the question? It's a good question, isn't it? Why are we asking God?
It is.
Okay, good. It's a good question. Why are we asking God to bring us back to him? Isn't that our job? What are we really requesting?
For him to help us?
To help us. Beautiful. 100% correct. So how does that work? What would it mean? What does it look like for God? Again, he can't trigger something in my head to make me come back to him. It's got to be my free will choice. Otherwise, I'm not really getting closer. If he goes and triggers the get close to God button in my head, I'm not really that much closer because he triggered the button, not me. I've got to trigger the button. So what am I asking God to do when I ask him to bring me back? Who's got a thought about that? All right, so
that's a hard question.
It is, I know.
Guidance? Would it be for guidance?
Guidance is great. So what would that look like? What does that mean, guidance? Explain that.
Well, if you're looking for an answer, you need to know where to go to find the answer.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. So in the course of the day, right, we could run into, for example, to amplify Dina's point, I could run into inspirational people or not. May happen, may not. Inspirational events, or maybe not. I might hear something or see something that's an opportunity. It's not going to force me to make the right decision. But if I ask God, bring me back the Torah, what it might mean is, you know, allow me to encounter inspirational people. Allow me to, you know, make that available to me. I'll make the decision. Hopefully I'll make the right decision, right? But sometimes we need divine assistance. Now that takes two forms. One is, like I said, presenting me with the opportunities that I'll have to jump at. There's also a remarkable statement in the Talmud. I guess we'll have to close with this. Remarkable statement that really circles back to the whole idea of the relationship with God. Listen to this. It's a very delicate, fascinating point. You know, we assume that we have, and it's true, we have free will. That is true. Right? And it's in our hands. We have to make a decision. That's 100% correct. So the Talmud says it's 100% correct, but it's really only 99% correct. Because the truth is, that the challenges sometimes are so difficult that naturally, follow this, naturally, there are times that we shouldn't be able to overcome them. But if we do everything we can, God guarantees that he's going to help us overcome it. That last little piece that we can't do on our own, right, God guarantees he's going to give us the push to help get us there. So in other words, God could have created the world two ways. He could have given me total free will where challenges present themselves and I have the ability to overcome or not. We have free will. That's one way. The other way is challenges present themselves. I have 90, 95, 99% of the ability to overcome it. But sometimes it's just too difficult. However, if I do everything I can, he guarantees he's going to give me that last 1% or 5%, whatever it is, and help me do it. So at the end of the day, the two are going to look exactly the same. Both of those scenarios, as they play out, will look exactly the same. I have a challenge. I make a decision to overcome it, to do the right thing, the morally, ethically commanded, correct thing to do, right, even in the face of a challenge. So I have a challenge. I commit myself to do it. I push as much as I can. At the end of the day, I will be successful. But that could take two forms. Either he really gave me the power to be successful, or he gave me the power to almost be successful. And then if I do that, he'll help me the last 5 yards. Right? The end result will be the same. But he chose to create the world the second way. This is what the Talmud says. Fascinating philosophical idea. He chose to create the world in such a way that if we do everything we can to fight that battle of morality and ethics and goodness and do the right thing, right? Whatever we can't accomplish on our own, he's going to help us accomplish. Because we wanted to do it, part of wanting is praying to him. The reason why he did this is so that when it comes to this most important endeavor in life, we have a relationship with him. We're not on our own. He wanted, the whole idea of prayer is this idea of a relationship. So instead of creating the world that I always have the full power to exercise my free will, he created it that I have 95%, 99%, and whatever I'm missing, he guarantees he's going to put in there. At the end of the day, the net result is the same. I have a challenge, a struggle, and I'm able to overcome it and do it. And I'm able to do the right thing. My body or whatever it is telling me do A, B, C, because that's comfort. Body seeks comfort and pleasure and short-term pleasure and everything. And my soul is telling me, no, do the opposite. Do what's good. Do what's long-term right. This is a struggle that we have, right? And at the end of the day, we choose to do the right thing. We can do the right thing. But is that because behind the scenes he's helping me? Or is that because I'm really on my own and he gave me the power to overcome? And the answer is the first place. Behind the scenes, he's helping me what I can't do. Right? Why does he do that? So he's with me, even in this struggle, to be close to him. Not just that my health is with me and my wisdom is with me. Sustenance and material success, he's with me. I'm with God. I have God. I have a relationship with God about all those things. I also have a relationship with God about getting close to God. It's a deep concept, but this is the idea. Anyway, so we're asking genius, right? We're asking for divine assistance that comes in a few different forms. The simple understanding of it, which is very, very important, really profound, but the simple understanding is that the inspiration that I need to get, the opportunities to be inspired, that whatever it is, he gives me that. That's what we ask God for. Make this available to me. Let me meet the right people. Let me hear the right things. Let me come pick up the right things and read the right things that will inspire me. That's a prayer to God to give me opportunities to grab onto growth and grab onto goodness. That's one part. The other part is that he actually has my back sometimes and helped me make the right decision if I put in as much effort as I could to actually make the right decision when the struggle comes up. I mean, this is a deeper concept of understanding what the request for bring me close to your Torah is. When at first glance, it seems strange to ask God to bring me close to the Torah.